Five Destinies and One. Rating, general audiences. Category, Gen. Fandoms, Stargate Universe, with just a little bit of Stargate Atlantis. Characters, Camille Ray, Lisa Park, Everett Young, Chloe Armstrong, and Eli Wallace. Additional tags for series coda and spoilers for the series finale. Written and read by Fresney. Summary. After the events of the series finale, five ways it could have gone. Then one more for the road. One, the rescue. Camille blinked. Not because her vision was blurry, but because Richard Woolsey was standing in front of her, and that was not part of her vision of an afterlife. He smiled at her. Camille? She cleared her throat. How? She stepped out of her stasis chamber, and Dr. McKay almost barreled into her, clutching a computer and tapping furiously while shouting directions to a team of thoroughly cowed scientists. Well, except for Eli, who grinned, and he was wearing a different shirt. He was no longer here. Instead, his shirt declared, "Stand back! I'm going to try science!" Camille tried to focus, but the sense of utter relief after all this time was like a string had been cut inside her, and only Will kept her standing. Richard spared a glance at Dr. McKay before saying in precise word drops, "Creative diplomacy." It was still odd to see Richard in a uniform after years of knowing the suited version, but it suited him. She dismissed the vague pun and said, "What does that mean?" Dr. McKay jabbed a finger in their direction. "Diplomacy, ha! It was my scientific genius that got us here." He grinned. "And now I'm the smartest man in three galaxies." He glanced at a monitor. No! That's not... No! Idiots!" He rushed off to rain fresh hell on someone's head. They weren't her personnel. She focused on Richard. She had 1,000 questions. But what she really wanted to know was, how long? 3 weeks. Richard glanced up and to the right. "We got lucky. The Lucian Alliance attacked Lungara, and we were able to renegotiate terms to come here after the attack." He smiled some more. "We've brought supplies for the teams that will be staying." Her heart sang on the corollary to his words, but what she said in return was, "I have documentation on the personnel who will be going back." They smiled at one another, perhaps a little foolishly, but why not? Soon they'd be going home. She'd be going home. 3 weeks. Home. Heart. They were the same word. Two, the drift. Lisa opened her eyes. She opened her eyes, and there was something to see. She was sitting in a sunlit meadow full of wildflowers. Eli smiled at her with Dale and Jin hovering behind him, which was unexpected. Eli said, "Hi." His smile was awkward. His smile said he had something awkward to tell her. Something she wasn't going to like. Lisa said, "Am I..." She felt oddly distracted by the birds singing in the trees. "You're not dead. Well, you're kind of dead, but only kind of. You're in Destiny's computer." Eli waved his hand at the trees and the flowers. "This is a simulation." Dale sighed. "Your stasis chamber was failing. We had to upload you." "It's a thing." Eli rolled his eyes. "It's part of the stasis pod setup. I figured it out. Oh." He made a short laugh, almost a bark. "A millennium ago. Funny thing. We've been traveling for, a while. 1,000 years, give or take. And, you know, a quick shrug. Alive in the computer is better than the alternative. So we've been uploading crew when pods fail." "I'm dead? And I'm alive?" It was hard to get past that thought, but since she was her, she had to ask. "Where are you getting the power to run the simulation?" "Oh, it takes a lot less power to run a simulation than it does to keep a stasis pod going." Eli bounced on his feet. Dale sighed, which is good, because we've been drifting for a while. "But, it's good to see you." She didn't know quite what to say to that. She wanted to ask about Ronald. But if he could be here with her, he would be. She got up out of the chair. "What can I do to help?" Three, the arrival. Everett was frozen one instant and stepping out of the chamber the next. Eli blinked at him from a stasis chamber down the row. It had duct tape on it, but given that Eli was blinking at him, that was a good sign. Everett said, "How long have we been in stasis?" Rush was already glowering at a computer. 3 years. He said the words like he was chewing on glass. Good to see some things didn't change. All around them, people were waking up and stepping out of their chambers. Eli sighed. We made it. Everett nodded. Yes. Now let's see what we've made it to. Behind him somewhere, Volker and Brody, downbeat, chorused, Yay! More adventure. That's right. Everett rolled his shoulders and got to it. 4. The Descent. Chloe woke up first. She wasn't sure why the computer did that at first, but when she saw Eli's message, she understood. She didn't turn off the stasis pods right away, although there wasn't much time. She stood in the observation deck and looked down at the lush green planet below. She wanted to wake up Matthew first, but instead she woke up Colonel Young. As his eyes focused on her, she said, We didn't make it. Eli didn't make it. She swallowed the lump at that. He realized that his math was off a week into it, after that we wouldn't make it. She shook her head. Colonel Young stepped out of the stasis pod, and it felt good to hand this over to him, to make this his problem. We're in orbit around a planet that doesn't have an active stargate. It's on this galaxy's galactic rim. It's been, 300 years. She swallowed again. It took us that long to get here. Destiny's orbit is decaying. It's like it took everything to get here, and then... She rubbed her face. The enormity of everything was just too much. But it was the Colonel's problem now. She focused on that. Right. Wake everyone up. He nodded briskly and didn't look at the broken stasis pod. We can use the shuttle to go down to the planet. Suddenly he smiled, an odd quirk of an almost smile. I wonder if this one will look like British Columbia, too. 5. The Farmer Scientist Waker. Eli sipped an algae mineral shake. It was pretty good. Oddly true. Well, it wasn't really a shake. It was algae. Frozen in one of the ship's dead zones and then thawed. Shake-like. Anyway, it was good for his digestion. He tended to his rows of plants. He was a farmer. Every day he walked by Lisa's stasis pod and said thank you. Because it was important to say thank you. It was also important to talk out loud in between weekly sanity, air quotes critical, trips home. He always made the air quotes around the sanity before he put the stone on the device and went to walk on a world and go to the mall. Report in to the SGC, see his mom, catch a movie, watch some TV. Doctor Who had been re-rebooted. Re-re-booted. It was good. Read some fic. Catch up on Yuletide. He was a scientist. He tended the daisy chains, mixed much, of solar panels that turned the light of their passage into power fed back into destiny. Made the place warmish, not to mention alive, in his little self-contained area of the ship. He didn't know who had picked them up on one or the other of the Descendants' planets. He thanked all the stasis pods. He'd long ago lined up every reflective surface to maximize on light, and feed the cells and the plants and him with his algae shake. Today, he was a waker of sleepers. After quite a lot of, too much thinking about it, he decided on, I'm the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, the shield that guards the realms of men, as his quote before he tapped the controls that brought Colonel Young awake again. The Colonel blinked at Eli. He was younger than Eli now. Even passing him every day for 30 years, it was oddly surprising. The Colonel said, Eli? His name was a question. Eli shrugged his you-are-here shirt, because that's where they were, get a grip, and said, We made it across, but my calculations were a little off. He shrugged again, carry the 10. He smiled, and together they unpopsicled everyone. That night, they all had algae shakes, quietly, because of the carry the 10, and then not so quietly, over carry the 10, and toasted the new galaxy that they were in. 1. Again. Drifting, they find the ship of the ancients, of ancestors. A quarter of a cosmic year past the war of drones, the greater and the lesser. Silent cold and dust. Their great vessels biological, bred and built for space. For in those long-distant wars, with machines that sought unloving, living technology, to win is to be warm and crafted. For as the ancestor philosopher once said, all true wealth is biological. He also said, Fear is the mind-killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over and through me. And when my fear is gone, I will turn and face fear's path. And only I will remain. They passed through, the descendants. Stand now, then. Into this place floats a captain, Hitchcock Wall. Born and built for space. His crew that dart along, an age then since air bloomed in these corridors of cold metal. blooms now air and light and warmth with the chlorophosphors they bring from their ships of space, into time, into destiny. Long since past, when the ancestors dead destiny carries could be breathed to life, but still, tenderly, the captain gives the nod. The living ship tows where they came from to a star, casts the ship into it and watches as it blooms itself alive in the brightness. Cast lots among themselves, they of living ships, of living descendants. The winners then gather their wealth of knowledge and bid farewell, enter therein into destiny, to be carried to where it is going.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return.